What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, a more pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today's April 29th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. We have The Sears Hunter, which is, of course, a top 100 movie, and also The Deer Hunter, the progressive rock band, but we went with the movie, all right, for the lovely graphic from Justin Paradis, as always. And J.P. Sears, 5.2 innings of 1 earned run, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 7 strikeouts. This really gets the Rangers, and I normally just brush aside J.P. Sears. I say, look, sure, he's like a 15-team hipster. That is, if you need some sort of chance of doing well, fine, but you don't really think he's terrible, so he's still on your teams, but you don't really think he should be around, but then, you know, it goes back and forth. In 12-teamers, I really don't think you should buy into this. What Sears has done is throw a ton of sweepers and four-seamers just over the plate to right-handers, and it just kind of works out. You see 6 whiffs in 7 Ks. And anytime you see fewer whiffs than strikeouts, you should have alarm bells because that is all called strikes. And yes, I know CSW is an important thing and I get it. Sears is not really a CSW darling. He does have good PLV marks because we do like sweepers and we do like his flat four seamer attack angle, but he doesn't utilize it well. He just doesn't locate super effectively. He just throws strikes and PLV will always like strikes. It gives him a chance, but it's not sustainable. It's not a high plateau that you want to consistently go after with Sears. So, I don't really want to go after this. He does get Miami next, but that could be meh, you know? So I don't really feel you need to go and get Sears. He's not like the breakout player of the year. Now, Tomoyuki Sugano. Oh, man. We're going to watch him after I do this live podcast. If you didn't know that, by the way, every single one of these Plus Pitch podcasts are on YouTube now. And you can watch it. You can see it in the roundup. Also, go back to the roundup article. You can just watch me talk about the roundup. You can watch it inside of the podcast post on the website. All these different ways for you to consume this, the best way for you. And Sugano, 5 innings, 0 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. You'll see that video of him after this. 17 whiffs against the Yankees. He got a King Cole, almost a golden goal. 36% CSW. How did he do that? It was a splitter killing it. 9 over 19 whiffs. Had a high CSW, of course, just from that mark. And you have the four-seamer at 16 inches of vert. He did really, really good in pitch separation, especially against lefties. You have curves as well coming down. I'm intrigued by this. This is also the peak of Sugano. Still a much higher bar than I expected him to ever reach, but this is not the consistent thing for Sugano. And unlike the other splitter guys we've seen, he has other offerings. So if this is legitimately a splitter that can go 9 whiffs in a game, it was 9 over 19. He used a lot, utilized them in good situations, mostly against lefties. Keep that in mind. But this does showcase something else that I haven't seen yet. Now, also remember that Sugano was a command-focused guy coming here. He was known as the one who could be so precise and dot the edges and everything like that. That's why I kind of thought of him as a lefty at first. He was righty. We haven't really seen that until this start. So it's not so out of the question for him to have this kind of peak performance either. Consider it. I'm not really going to go after Sugano with his next outing. That is against the Royals. Not a terrible matchup. It's in Camden. It's up to you. I think in 12-teamers, fine. Take a shot at it. The Orioles are desperate for something. Maybe they can all link and unify or be inspired by Sugano here. But I'm not going to tell you that he's going to go 17 whiffs again. If you want to also hear about Cade Povich, who's going today, well, I'm going to actually be talking to him Wednesday morning. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. for an episode of The Craft. It will be live. So go check that out. If you have questions that you want me to ask Cade Povich, you can ask them live during the YouTube live stream at 9 a.m. You can also leave any sort of comments inside of our Discord, inside the playback stream today, at me on Twitter. I'm really looking forward to talking to Cade Povich. Griffin Canning was not on the list yesterday. I was so close to doing it, and he was, I think, literally the last one off. He went against the Nationals here, got the wins, 5 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, and 5 strikeouts. He's on a bit of a Vargas rule as he's finally locating his slider down effectively. Oh, I love to see that. What I really not liked about Canning is that he goes a lot of sliders and changeups, but he just kind of throws them over the plate a lot, dancing in the disco kind of. and they're not the filthiest breakers and secondaries. While the four seamer has had to throw, he's had to throw more than usual at times, and that makes sense, right? More than usual at times. Yeah, there are times that Griffin Canning has to throw these fastballs for strikes, and those are easily his worst pitch. So the more they can get by with these sliders and changeups and not have to throw four seamers in the zone, things are good. That's really what he did here. And I don't know how long he can reliably do that. When it comes to the pitches themselves, I don't really see much of a difference, save for improved location at the moment. It's not something that we always see stick around. And I'd be a little cautious with Griffin Canning. It's why I've been so negative on him. And I do just want to mention, yes, 5 innings, 0 runs, you got the win. 5 strikeouts, we'll take it. 7 base runners with 3 walks. Just kind of shows that, right, even at the peak of this, it's not so absurdly good. That's all I'm trying to get at. I'm very terrified of a low floor here from Griffin Canning. You have Bailey Ober against the Guardians. This was supposed to be a fun matchup, and it wasn't. We'll talk about Gavin Williams later. But 7.2 innings, 1 run, 8 hits, and 0 walks for Bailey Ober. Got a win. And 2 strikeouts. Just 2. He faced a lot of lefties, as I expected, against the Guardians. I actually got a comment, I think, for the streaming piece, because I said, hey, look, he's getting at the Guardians. I like this because his best pitch is a changeup. He should be really good against lefties. I saw someone say, yeah, but he has like a 900-plus OPS against lefties this year. And I get that comment. I really do. I mean, that's not good against lefties this year. That's also results-based. And results-based for individual pitches is a trap I see a lot, because the sample size of that is generally very low, especially this early in the season. And there are a lot of pitches that get to it. Keep in mind also that maybe a few home runs on it will really offset that, especially early on in the year. And that's results in the past. I think Bailey Ober with his changeup is generally very good against lefties, and it was here. Now, the four-seamer is still not getting upstairs as we want it to. And I want to see 92 with 60% high location. Probably, honestly, 70% as he used to. Bailey Ober's not doing that. It was actually 90.2 miles per hour on the four-seamer upstairs. He didn't have to face many righties, which is good because the slider has not been good for him. That's actually been his biggest mistake this year. So I'm in sell-high mode for Bailey Ober. The velocity is down. The four-seamer command, once again, it's just been a long time since we've seen him really paint the top of the zone red. And that's concerning. And of course, the slider, I think, is just kind of at the moment. So, yeah, I would sell high. You have Nick Martinez against the Cardinals. Got a win, 6 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 3 strikeouts. Just 6 whiffs, 26% CSW. I have to give him props because there's one pitch that I'm going to say, yes, this is a good pitch every single time for Nick Martinez. It would be his changeup. It was horrible. It was just no feel whatsoever. And the fact that he was able to go 1 run in 6 innings is a really good testament to the variety from Nick Martinez. He was able to sneak over all these four seamers in the middle of the plate, which is his most hittable pitch by far. And also against righties, I will give him tons of credit for having the slider and cutter go outer third and down for the most part in that quadrant. I like it a lot. He's a Toby. He gets a Nats next. That's fine. I just do want to mention that Nick Martinez hasn't really fully locked in. And before this one, the ratios were just terrible. I haven't been too enthused about Nick Martinez, but yeah, he's a prototypical Toby. Patrick Corbin did well against the Athletics, kind of. 4.2 innings and 200 runs. And I say well based on his arsenal, doing whatever he could. Against lefties, I gotta say, he nailed the sinker inside as he should. He went out down and away with the slider. Like, he did what he was supposed to do. Against righties, the slider was just exclusively down. He didn't get many strikes on it, but it was always down, and that's cool. He has the cutter inside mostly to right-handers. The sinker, okay, kind of over the plate or whatever. He's trying hard. But it was 7 hits, 1 walk, and 5 Ks. He's still hittable. But maybe that BABIP would have been a little bit better. And fewer foul balls so that it's not 93 pitches to go through 4.2 innings. Like, he's trying as hard as he can, and I give him props for that. And I'll say, with a lot of guys like Corbin who go 90-plus pitches and throw enough strikes, he will have a productive game 1 out of 3 starts. That's how it is for, like, Michaelis. That's how it is for Corbin. It's how it is for, I don't know, like, Andre Pallante, who went 6 innings, 3 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks against the Reds in Cincinnati. 9 whiffs, 23% CSW, 90 pitches. 94-95 on the four seamer. He just went really exclusively with that against lefties. I do like that the slider was fully arm side, sorry, glove side against right-handers. Also, I made that typo yesterday. I wrote arm side and made it glove side. I don't know why I always do that, but the slider stayed away from righties, and then the sinker was so good inside. Now, the slider wasn't a high strike pitch. He missed too far, and that kind of messed him up. But I really love seeing that kind of pitch separation, that clear intent, and really that grouping. And it is precision. It's just, okay, cool, let's just move it a little bit, right? And I love seeing that sinker placement. Now, against lefties, the cut four-seamer, it's not really my favorite thing. And clearly, this is not quite enough. But I just like to see guys execute, or at least do the right things, even if it's not at perfection. It's not just like, here are all my pitches, good luck. You know, that's kind of cool from Pallante. All right, we have Bryce Elder against Coors, and he had a birthday party, 3 earned runs in 6 innings, whatever, fine, we move on. But we got to talk about Dustin May, Ronel Blanco with the gallows pole, Jack Flaherty, Gavin Williams, and others, and we're going to talk about all of them after this break. Dustin May against the Marlins, 5.1 innings of 3 earned runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, 3 Ks. Man, that's too straight, where Dustin May has let us down. And the thing is, he's going to get the Marlins again. This is assuming that Kasparias is going later in the week, taking over for Tyler Glasnow. And it's wild, right? Like, you're going to get a third shot in a good matchup to make us feel okay with you, Dustin. The problem right now is that his sinker is not like 95, 96. It's like 93 and change, like essentially 94 on something underneath it. And it's so annoying. They're not well spotted. He's not getting inside to right-handers. The sweeper is not looking great. Like, Dustin, I was really in on you. Why? Because you have a sinker-sweeper combo that should just constantly do well against righties. And you were commanding it, as you should. And then I said, okay, great. Now you have a four-seamer that can go upstairs, and you have a cutter as well. And as you get more time, and this is the first year you're really getting more than 10 starts straight in the rotation, like you're up to, what, 5 or 6 now, you should be able to develop further. You should actually get this polished and be able to actually make those tweaks and be good. And to see him at this point right now, after a really bad start, to not make any adjustments, to really stay there again, hover around 94 on the fastball, man, like, come on, you got to make an adjustment. This is how you get through this, right? This is what you're supposed to be learning right now. And to see that in 2 straight starts and not make that adjustment is very disconcerting. I think you go one more. It's against the Marlins again. It's a good win chance. Just go one more. And I think it's the best scenario. If it was a tough team, yeah, you can move on. But because it's the Marlins, you say, fine. Like, this can't be that bad. Like, this was 5.1 innings of 300 runs. Like, okay, the reward is worth the risk here. Ronel Blanco against the Tigers, 5 innings, 300 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts, 19 whiffs, 36% CSW for Blanco. Now, just 6 strikeouts in 5 innings, 300 runs is not really what you want. You didn't get a win, so you're not really happy with it. However, the curve did some work, 42% CSW. We had a slider going an 82% strike rate and just hounding right-handers, and a changeup that was really alive against lefties. Now, the four-seamer had a 44% strike rate, and here's the thing. I'm all for Blanco being really picky with his four-seamer. I am. I think that's actually a good thing for him to do. 44% strikes when you're throwing it 32% of the time and near 50% of the time against righties, that's not good enough. Right. If you're doing that, then you need to introduce something else against righties, and you can't throw it that often. Right. Use the changeup against them. Use the curve, whatever. Just pair something else, because you can't just throw all these balls all the time. That's really it. That's the problem with this one. So if you think about it this way, you have a 44% strike rate, yet an overall 36% CSW. That means the curve, the slider, and the changeup were really effective. Right. So that's cool. He might get the White Sox if Lance McCullers does not go on Sunday. It does look like Lance McCullers is making his debut for the first, like, what, like, first time, like, 3 years or something on that Sunday. If not, then if McKellar's is making that debut against the White Sox, then it would be in Milwaukee on Monday for Blanco. I'm okay with that one. I think it's worth a shot to see if Blanco is actually getting into something here. Jack Flaherty against the Astros on the other side of this, pretty disappointing. 5 innings of 4 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks. The curve went only 53% strikes, and the slider was more hittable than usual. The four-seamer wasn't along the edges at all. Essentially what happened is that guys could just like look straight down the middle, like middle down, and that was it. And the curve wasn't as competitive as it usually is. That's it. It wasn't so terrible. It was just not prime Flaherty, which is really upsetting because I was saying he's just on the verge of ace is going to ace. Ugh. You have Will Warren against the Orioles. Went 3.1 innings of 4 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 5 Ks. And the four-seamer is still flat. It's actually as flat as I've seen it now. 1.5 height-adjusted VAA. Not 1.3, 1.5, which is good. He has 16 inches of vert with that. Those are all good things, but he didn't spot it well. And the changeup wasn't terrible against lefties, but it wasn't out of the zone. It was inside the zone in that lower down and away quadrant. So it got hit a little bit. The sweeper had some moments, but then also allowed some really hard contact. It wasn't super precise. So I'm disappointed with Warren at the moment. And you can see how these things would work. He's just not refined with it yet. So it could just click next start. It could just take some time before we really get into that, oh, hey, Warren's got his rhythm and really getting going. The good news here is that Warren does have runway, right? Carrasco's still in that rotation. So whatever happens down the road here, if Luis Gil comes back or they trade for something, well, Warren is still here and he's going to stay there. So everything is okay here. I don't think that Stroman would kick out Will Warren at all. For deeper leagues, I think you hold. In 12-teamers, I don't feel like you have to continue with Will Warren at the moment, but it could turn around at next start. You have Trevor Williams, Never Trevor, and 5.1 innings, 5 run runs, 7 base runners, 5 Ks. You just don't need to, guys. Ryan Feltner did not do well. He was also 2 ticks down. He was in Coors against Atlanta. Of course he didn't do well. We don't do this. Edward Cabrera, oh my gosh. I mean, it was against the Dodgers. You're not going to start him here anyway. But the slider was barely used. The curveball was all over the place. The changeup was, ugh. Like, oh man. I still see a world where Edward Cabrera figures this out. We've seen him have all of the pieces work separately and just not all together. He's going to get the Dodgers again, I think. Yeah, you don't want to do this at all right now. You can just kind of move on. And even if you do see it once, like, you're not going to believe it's going to be there, right? And the last one we got to talk about is Gavin Williams. And fortunately, for throwing 61 pitches in 2 innings, he only allowed 4 earned runs. I know, bad. I'm really upset about it. 7 hits, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. So this is the thing that really bothers me about this one. It's not necessarily that the sweeper and the curve were just not well spotted and didn't get many strikes. It's more that the cutter was just featured like 3 times. And the whole point of the cutter is that when you're not feeling the sweeper or the curve, you have support with it instead of the fastball. Now, it may have been that he didn't like the feel of that either, and it did get hit hard because he threw in the middle of the plate when he did. So I don't know. He's a piece. Poor execution, awesome stuff. I want to keep saying this is a process. And if you talk about Gavin Williams on July 1st, you can be like, Gavin Williams is great. We love him. He's been so good. It's awesome. It is April 29th. I would even say like May 20th, I'm curious where we're going to be at it, right? But it's a process right now. And you have to assess as a manager, okay, if I drop Gavin Williams, what am I getting? Is it for a temporary thing? Do I think like this roster spot is going to be utilized well instead? I'm not saying that Gavin Williams is going to wake up and be a top 20 starter or something like that. But you also understand the potential here of the, you saw the Yankee start, essentially. You see the potential. So do what you want. Right now he's a hipster, headache-inducing pitcher, stifling the entire roster. Yes, I'm going to lower him next week on the list as long as he doesn't have some glorious outing before then over the weekend. And I'm trying to remember who that would be, and that would be for Gavin Williams. Would be at the Jays. Part of me says I'm starting him. Part of me says just have him on your bench and just see what happens. It really depends on your head-to-head league. In a roto, I think you just kind of do it. But yeah, that's the Gavin Williams situation. It stinks. I'm really upset about it. And I really hope that cutter just finds its form. All right, that is it for today. Thank you all so much for leaving your ratings and reviews on iTunes. I know I say it a ton, but really, those are helping us get better sponsors. And it just goes a long, long way, just the reviews in general. Just thank you guys so much for doing that. But that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.